Welcome to the Dietitian's Dish podcast. We are Gina and Nicole, two dietitian mamas and good friends living in Ohio and Michigan.
This is a podcast dedicated to making whole family wellness more fun and less stressful. Whether you're listening in the car or slumped on the couch with a glass of wine, welcome.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Dietitian's Dish podcast. I'm Gina.
And I'm Nicole.
And today we are dishing about baby-led weaning. Yay. But first, Nicole, let's catch up. What's been going on?
Okay. So I'm really tired today. It makes me realize that you get up way earlier than me, which I texted you this morning and you were like, oh, I said I'm still sleeping or whatever. And I didn't
mean understood.
Literally. And you're like, oh, I'm sorry. I was like, I did text you first, Gina. Like, you don't have to apologize.
I was like, you got that text and you heard it and then responded that fast. And then I realized why you said that. You said that because what you said didn't make any sense. And you were saying you were really tired, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just a little bit slow in the morning. What can I say? As you are too, I guess.
Yeah, a big time. Well, and today it sounds like similar to yourself about killed my entire family. So I had a late hockey game the past 2 weeks. So a 9:35 start. And that is just brutal.
That is, at night? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, Sunday nights. So had it last week, had it last Sunday and this past Sunday. And then I was just whiny because I cut my finger on a mandolin making dinner last night. And I literally took off like half the pad of my pinky finger.
Stop.
It was, I'm like, Shay, this is what a real boo-boo looks like. And she's like, okay. Because we had previously or earlier in the day had to run out for Peppa Pig Band-Aids because she had a hangnail.
Oh, yeah.
And so I showed her what a real boo-boo looks like. I'm like, and see, mommy's not crying. And she like just had this deer in the headlights look. But she didn't seem all that grossed out by the blood. So anyway.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, daylight savings about killed us. The late night hockey games are torture. And I sliced over my finger. But otherwise, we're good.
So you lost part of your nipple in the first episode that we had. And now you're losing fingers.
I know. And I play with, you know, hockey with a bunch of guys. And one of the guys like shook my hand really hard last night. Not like hard, but like a firm handshake in like our little line after the game. And I was like, ow. And he had no clue. And then I was talking about it with one of the guys afterwards. And he's like, okay, it's not that big of a deal. I'm like, you try washing long hair with 9 digits, sir. And he was just, he like rolled his eyes and walked away. He's like, see you next week, Nicole. So
oh my gosh,
their empathy runneth dry.
I do not know how you do something that late. I mean, just doing this podcast at 7:30 or 8 o'clock is enough for me. I mean, I couldn't imagine getting out on ice. And then what time do you go to bed on Sundays when you have a game that late?
Yeah, that's the problem. So I get home and I only live a mile from the rink. So previously but it's kind of like, you know, a commute after work, it kind of decompresses you. So previously when I played like in South Bend, I would have a 40 plus minute drive home to kind of chill out. And if I were smart, I would shower at the hockey rink, but I never would. So the issue is really that I get home and I'm completely wired. So I take a warm shower, of course, and I'm like essential oiling myself. And then I was reading my Kindle until well after midnight last night.
Oh, wow.
And then I got up at 3 o'clock in the morning to go to the bathroom and my finger burned so bad. I had trouble falling back asleep. So yeah, I'm just whiny today.
Yeah. And then the daylight savings, which I honestly, I have this theory that what we do, and Nick makes so much fun of me with daylight savings. Every time we have it, I set the clocks ahead or forward about 2 nights before you're supposed to do it. So we kind of get in that rhythm about 2 days before it actually is supposed to happen. And
so smart.
Let me tell you, it works like a charm, especially when you have kids. I've been doing this for years. Even before we had kids, I did it because I'm very, very adamant about my sleep and my schedule. And I don't know, it's been working for us. So just a little tip.
I think it's so smart. This morning, because Shay is much less of a morning person than Piper. So I went in there and opened her door to like let the hallway light kind of stream in her room as I went to go get Piper ready. Set up Piper with breakfast downstairs, came back upstairs for Shay. She had shut her door. She got up. She's like, nope. Like,
yeah, that sounds like Paige. Yep. She covers herself. She hates it when I do the exact same thing. I open the door to let the light in to kind of like ease her into the morning. And she's just like, no, go away. And I felt for her. I really did. Because it was like 5 o'clock, basically. it was like 5 o'clock for her, even though technically it wasn't, because, I mean, if you think about it, she also went to bed at what would have been 6 o'clock, you know? So I don't know.
Still, but that's early for our little people. It really is.
It's early, and it's early for us too. So I was complaining too. I had to wake Nick up this morning, which never happens. I was like, Nick, are you going to wake up? And he got mad at me for not waking him up sooner. We seriously got in a fight. That was another thing. We got in a fight this morning because he, like, I don't know, expected me to wake him up. I've never once in our entire life woken him up. And he got pissed at me because it was 6:20 and I hadn't woken him up. It was very odd. So it was a very odd morning. And then I took an Uber to work because I didn't have a car, which was also very strange.
I know. I got that text from you and I was like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to complain about my Monday. Yours sounds way worse.
But it was only like 20 minutes. So that's the good thing. I mean, our mornings are very, very fast. So
yeah. Did your day improve at least?
It did. It improved. It's spring break. So it's really, really slow on campus. So, you know, I got a lot done because, you know, there aren't any students here. But it's also, I think, boring when there's no students around. I mean, it's much more fun when there's students on campus and the operations are open. But yeah, it was good. It definitely improved, I'd say.
Good.
So let me just talk a little bit about, so I know we've already gone for a little bit, probably over what we our time allotted for our brief catch up. But real quick, what I've been going through the last, and I want to do an episode on this. Not just peeing, but things in general that your kids do as they get older that you freak out about in the moment, but it always ends up being fine. And one of them, I'm going to knock on wood here, is that Paige has had kind of a regression. She's 4.5 exactly. And she was potty trained at about 2.5. And it was the easiest thing we've ever done. I mean, she potty trained in 2 days, no issues, no regression, no wetting the bed, nothing. So it was almost too easy. And then last week, I got an email from her preschool that she had peed her pants. I didn't think too much of it because sometimes she holds it for too long because she's having so much fun and then just forgets to go to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. So the next day it happened again. And they said something about how it had a really strong odor and that I should probably bring her in to get her checked for a UTI. So of course, automatically I was like, that's the explanation. She's got a UTI, no big deal. We'll get her some meds, done. Well, I brought her to get her checked, which was also a pain in the butt in itself because I had to get her to pee in a cup, which was a nightmare. She peed once and I didn't catch it. So I had to wait again for her to, it was terrible. So anyway, she didn't have a UTI. So of course that's great that she doesn't have a UTI, but at the same time, I kind of wanted that as an explanation for why she was peeing at school. Long story short, she peed again and it sounds like she's just kind of afraid to go poop at school. She once told me that she doesn't like it when people hear her plop.
Oh, tell her it never changes.
I know. I was thinking that exact same thing. Paige, it will never. Yeah, you better get used to it now because people are going to be hearing your plop for a long time. But so I think she's just embarrassed to go at school poop. So she holds it for so long and it just kind of builds up in there. And then it presses up against her bladder and then she's peeing her pants. So,
oh, yeah. Poor baby.
So, I know. I feel so bad. And I understand. I mean, it's they all pee right next to each other and poop right next to each other, boy and girl. Mm-hmm. So I understand. So this week has been much better. And actually the last 2 days of last week were also really good. So we haven't had any incidents for 4 days. So I'm hoping that that's a sign of things to come. So it's, we're going to have smooth sailing from here on out. I'm really hoping. So, yeah, that was my week.
Well, I mean, if she potty trained that easily, you deserve a little something. No, I'm just kidding.
No, you're right. It was way too easy. you're so right. Well, trust me, with Cameron, I feel like it's going to be the opposite. He's going to be, you know, potty trained in 5 months. And I want to say that we actually waited. I think Paige was actually more closer to 3. She was 2 years and I want to say 8 or 9 months when we did it. And we didn't have another child at the time. So, mm-hmm. Or no, we did. No, I take that back. We did have Cameron at that time. But we waited until he was about 5 months or 6 months to do that because we knew that, you know, right after having a baby wasn't the best time to potty train for us or for her. So it ended up being a good time. So anyway, so hopefully things will get better. It already has in that regard. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Patience. Yeah. Exactly. It's hard. It's hard on both of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nick was the one. I think he took it a little bit. He tends to, and again, when we do an episode on this topic, he tends to overanalyze most situations. So he was just going crazy over this whole thing. Like, why is she doing this? I don't understand. And that's kind of his take on most things. Whereas I'm kind of more laid back, like, you know what? It's normal. They're going to go through things like this. It's going to be fine. She's going to be fine, which is usually the opposite. Usually it's him saying, Gina, calm down. It's going to be fine. But with our kid, for some reason, we have opposite views when it comes to freaking out and taking things overboard.
He has stronger reactivity. That's what
he does. Who says that? That's the PC way of saying it.
I'm a very reactive person, so I can definitely relate. But yeah, I think you both have we all do, right? We're more mm-hmm. reactive in certain situations than others, but
definitely.
I'm sure some of our listeners could commiserate with your regression woes. I think
that's
super common. I you know what? Shay had something like that not too long ago, and it just as quickly as it came, it went. So
yeah,
I'm sure it'll be the same.
I hope. Thanks.
Cool. Right. Should we hop in for today?
Let's do it. Yeah.
All right. So today we are dishing about baby-led weaning. And kind of without consulting you, Gina, I just decided that we would be best served to keep this pretty basic. Mm-hmm. And so I mean, to be honest, when I started feeding my kids at 6 months of age, I didn't really do a whole lot of research as to what exactly baby-led weaning entailed. And so I'll be honest, like, I am not a expert at all when it comes to the do's and the don'ts. And I think it can be a little militant, unnecessarily so, as to whether you're like in or you're out or you're dancing with baby-led weaning. And so mm-hmm. I think we are on the same page in that we just want to encourage parents to experiment and follow their child's lead. And there's no right and wrong. It's very child dependent, family dependent. And what we were comfortable doing, others may not be, and so on and so forth. So yeah. I used I didn't put it in the show notes yet, but it was actually a dietitian by the name of looking for
Sarah Remmer.
Yes. Thank you.
And you have it in the notes.
I do. Okay. I just couldn't find it. She had this great post basically on baby-led weaning. There it is. 101 kind of stuff. And so for those who may not know what baby-led weaning is, it's basically letting your little one feed him or herself the foods, usually healthy foods, because you're offering them that he or she wants to eat right out of the gates. And so it's typically started, and I would say the timing here is what's really important, because the whole idea is to offer whole foods before purees. And so I shouldn't say before, but it's really not defaulting to quote unquote baby food, but really feeding young children starting at the age of 6 months food that adults would eat. And so food is kind of the idea. And so as soon as a baby is capable of self-feeding, that's when you would want to start. And so kind of some signs there would be the baby's able to sit up and has decent enough head control and enough motor skills that they can pick up like a large like piece of something, usually like a stick or like I think of toast, like cutting it into like sticks, but something that they can bring to their mouth and kind of just start experimenting with. So the goal is really not to provide any huge amount of their nutrition, because at 6 months, that should be primarily coming from breast milk or formula, but really to start that initiation process of this is food and kind of here's what you can expect. And then from there, kind of throwing anything and nearly everything at the baby. So it's really allowing babies to learn how to chew mm-hmm. or gum, really, because they don't have teeth first, and then swallow. And it also helps prevent parents from pushing food. So it's taking away the parental role in feeding. So that traditional kind of spoon feeding your baby is out the mm-hmm. window. And yep. it's more throw something on the tray table in front of the baby and just kind of see what happens. And so the whole like one food introduced at a time, which is a very traditional kind of way of would we call that authoritarian / authoritative way of feeding, right, is pretty much out the window. And so it's a very interesting, I call it the lazy approach to feeding your kid, which I'm all on board with. But some of the benefits, do you agree with that?
I do consider it a lazy way of feeding. However, all I can think of is how messy it was. Now I realize you have two dogs. I have zero. So, I mean, cleaning that shit up, I am sorry, but it was a disaster. Yeah. Every single, Now, granted, even when your kid is eating purees, it's still a mess. But I just specifically remember when they were, you know, doing the whole experimenting with food, baby led weaning, it was always, we bought actually a plastic sheet to put under high chairs specifically so we could just pick it up at the end and just like toss it outside. Mm-hmm. And that actually worked really, really well.
Yeah.
And hose it down with the, you know, sprayer. But yes, all in all, I would say it's kind of the lazy way, not lazy in a bad way, but it's so easy.
I think
yes.
of it as lazy in that you're planning to feed your family. You're not planning something for, say, you and your spouse and your older child or your older children, and then something different for baby. It's really a means of what you're eating, baby's eating.
Yeah, you don't have to do much thinking. And that's
yeah,
what that's beautiful.
I love it. And that's, I still to this day kind of adhere pretty closely to that. And there's a ton of benefits involved. And so simple stuff like improved dexterity and hand-eye coordination, you know, those are huge things. The pediatrician mm-hmm. is going to be looking for some of those, you know, milestones at that age specifically. Better acceptance of food textures and flavors. And I want to ask you specifically about that later as to whether or not you think that is true in the case mm-hmm. of your kids. Okay. Definitely early oral motor, kind of that chewing skill develops. Less food allergies. And I think that is huge, 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 huge to support baby-led weaning. Healthier body weight.
I had never heard that one. I'm sorry to interrupt. I saw that on your notes. I've never heard, and I'm trying to figure out why. I understand the breastfeeding with less food allergies, but I don't understand why baby-led weaning would have, why that would cause less food. Is it because people aren't as afraid to give them these foods like eggs and peanuts mm-hmm. and...
It's because,
okay.
because baby-led weaning supports early introduction of the, like the top allergens.
Okay.
So you're
okay.
not waiting. I mean, I don't even know what it was 10 years ago. I think you waited until at least.
A year at least.
Yeah. Maybe I want to say it was 2 in some of the resources I ran across in preparation for this podcast. And I was like, wow. I mean, to not give a child peanuts until the age of 2. And I mean, as a parent, you kind of hold your breath the first time that you offer an allergen because a top 8.
It's an allergen.
Mm-hmm. And it can be a little nerve wracking, but the idea being that there's a lot of data to support that there may be more food allergies today because of this withholding allergens until later. Right. In childhood.
I actually, one of the kids that Paige went to daycare with for years, he is about 3. And when she left daycare, he had just turned 3 actually. When she left that daycare, he had still not been fed peanuts or peanut butter. Mm. Oh, because his mom just didn't believe that he needed it or that she was afraid to give it to him. And anyway, we could talk about this and we will have a podcast about this for sure. But
well, and I think that's even part of it is. Additionally, I would add to with baby-led weaning, the idea is definitely to offer baby the same foods that you're eating. However, right. if you are somebody who, let's say, doesn't like seafood, that's something that you should still offer to your child. So just mm-hmm. because I think that's a really, and that's more of just a soapbox item for me, is just because you don't like something, it's important to still talk positively about all foods and you know, just really offer up tastes. Where the opportunity presents itself, and then to just not make assumptions about what your child will or will not eat.
Right.
And I think we all fall, you know, victim to it. But I know even dietitians who are like, well, I don't like that, so I would never offer my kid that. And it's like, well, but, you know, you're not your kid. You know, they may really like that. And the whole idea being really expand their horizons at this super young age and mm-hmm. the idea and goal being to decrease picky eating and really gain acceptance of a wide array of foods and textures and flavors.
Right. Yep. That was my number one reason for doing it was the textures and flavors part, getting them used to new flavors, new textures specifically, I would say. I mean, that was one of the reasons why I wanted to breastfeed so badly because I knew those flavors were carried in my breast milk to both my kids. Mm-hmm. But then going beyond the breast milk, I wanted to do the baby-led weaning so that they got those textures because I've known so many, have had so many friends or friends, relatives, people that I've known, acquaintances who have, you know, texture issues, quote unquote. And, you know, because of that, they don't eat, you know, a wide array of foods. And I didn't want my kids to have texture issues. Now, I'm not going to say that baby-led weaning is the only reason that they do not, but I do think it supported that with my kids. Mm-hmm. because I know that Nick has some texture issues, and he always says, I don't like the texture of that. And there's several foods that he won't eat because of the texture. I am not like that at all. And maybe it's also genetic. Maybe it's partly genetic. But I think the earlier you, and the more wider variety of different textures that you give to your kids, the better they are going to accept them. So I truly believe that was one of the biggest reasons why I did the baby-led weaning myself. So. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. And you're right. I mean, Sarah talked about potential risks of baby-led weaning, risks in quotes. And mm-hmm. the mess was by far. I was actually talking to a dietitian at work the other day, and she's the super sweet, like very prevention-based dietitian who is a mother of five. And yeah. she's also a vegetarian, and she just whips up the most, oh my gosh, she like puts me to shame in the kitchen. And we were talking about—
Is that possible?
Yeah, totally. She's amazing. And I mean, and a mom of five, it's just, it blows my mind.
I can't. No way.
She's a rock. She's true rock star status in my mind.
That's amazing.
And
yeah.
She talked about just not even the food aspect of it, but just how much she recalls the event of eating in her house. And mm-hmm. that really it involved, I mean, much to our dismay, rolling it around in your fingers, rolling it all, you know, mm-hmm. rubbing it on your face, running it through your hair. And, you know, she really identified the whole process. And yes, with that, a ton of mess, but really that made food fun. And yep. she swears by it. She is a huge, huge baby-led weaning advocate, and her kids are fantastic eaters. And they're actually all now adults for the most part. Okay. I mean, one's in high school now, but the rest are all adults. And she said that independently as, you know, adults in this world, they have fantastic diets. And as a dietitian mama, she's super proud. So I'm like, that's really cool. Like, I love hearing stuff like that.
Yeah, I remember the first time I heard the whole theory about letting your kids play with their food and like why it's important, because I'm very anal type A. If I see my kids playing with their food, of course, my immediate response is to kind of jump at them and say, you know, put it down, don't play with your food. But with the baby-led weaning, I remember reading in the book that I actually put in the show notes about how important it is to let them play with their food. It's not going to mean that they're always going to play with their food. It's another example of one of those things that just because they do it now doesn't mean, and you let them, doesn't mean that they're going to do it forever, or that they're going to think it's okay to play with their food as they get older. They'll learn that food is to be consumed, but allowing them to play with it and appreciate it and not come to the dinner table thinking that they're going to get in trouble or scolded mm-hmm. is so important. It's fun. So I loved that. There was, I think, a section about that in the book that I put in the links. I'm not sure if you read it. I think it's just like the basic mm-hmm. baby-led weaning book.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was super messy. And it wasn't even just, I mean, obviously I would put the kids in the bathtub. I think I would say for the first 6 months, right after they ate, they would go directly into the bathtub. Mm-hmm. But it was also just, and it still is, food everywhere on the counter, on the floor, on the high chair. And cleaning those high chairs is not easy.
No.
Now, Paige turned 6 months, or no, when it was the summer months, it was easy to just bring the high chair outside and spray it down with the hose. But when it was cold outside, that wasn't as easy to do. And we don't have a dog or anyone who can just go around and lick, you know, the floor and the high chair. So cleaning that thing sometimes took 20 minutes, but, you know, I wouldn't do it on any other way. It wasn't a potential risk, quote unquote, that swayed me from doing that or doing it again if I or to ever miraculously conceive again.
Yeah, doesn't that make you a little sad?
A little bit.
So one other risk, and I'm putting these in air quotes, is potentially iron. And so mm-hmm. again, so long as the food is not displacing breast milk or formula in the diet, I think this is a far lesser concern. But supplementation is always an option. So that's just kind of a side note.
Yeah, and that's really because most babies who are fed purees, the first puree is an iron fortified cereal. Mm-hmm. And I think actually with Paige, I did, because I was worried about iron deficiency. I was always iron deficient as a kid. And honestly, my doctor doesn't test iron, which I think is very strange. I know a lot of pediatricians do that iron test. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So actually I found out when she was two that she was iron deficient, and I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it was partly because I don't ever give her fortified foods, but I did when she was a baby give her iron fortified cereal just for a little bit. Then I kind of stopped. and I probably should have continued or just purchased an iron drop of some sort, which mm-hmm. is what I give Cameron now. So knowing that Paige was iron deficient, I started giving iron to Cameron when he was about 6 or 7 months. I put it in his bottle. It smells horrific, and mm-hmm. I don't know how he drinks it, but he does. I think he's mm-hmm. used to it at this point, so it works really well.
I used to do the same thing with vitamin D. Our pediatrician highly recommended that because we live in Michigan and I had babies in the fall. So they weren't seeing a whole lot of sunlight for a while.
We do those little vitamin D drops. The, mm-hmm. It has like 365 little drops, like tiny little mm-hmm. drops. Love it. Love it. Love it.
Yeah. Both great, you know, potential supplements for little ones. So I think another risk, and I think this is a misunderstood risk about baby-led mm-hmm. weaning, is the potential for choking. And I'll use that very loosely. I am jumping ahead, but I won't jump ahead. So just to clarify, choking is the inability to breathe. So a child is not going to make any noise mm-hmm. If they are truly choking. If they are gagging and they don't have this really scared look on their face, they're gagging. I mean, and that's perfectly normal with baby-led weaning. So that's not to dissuade any different types of textures. I think they all have a place. And so that's just something to know going in. And the other thing with that is if you, as the person sitting there with the baby, freak out, they will too. And so you have to really trust the process. And at 6 months, they are developmentally ready to start this process. And so I think it can be a little scary at first, but I think that it's just important to realize the difference between choking and just gagging and working through that. So, but that said, I think baby CPR is a good thing to have. I mean, the risk is always there with any type of, eating. So, sure. I think that's just one thing to make note of.
And that's also one of the potential benefits of baby-led weaning, which I think was made very clear in the book that I read, how mm-hmm. you would think that giving, a 6-month-old or, an 8-month-old, however old, an infant, a carrot stick or a thing of broccoli would increase their risk for choking. But actually, the baby-led weaning process as a whole reduces their risk of choking. And I'm not going to try to explain it on this. Basically, I will briefly. It basically kind of helps them understand where their gag reflex kind of starts. And I guess your gag reflex gets deeper and deeper as you age or kind of as you get used to eating. So when they're really young, so right now, I mean, I could probably put something, this is going to sound really, I don't want to make this. I could probably put something really far down my throat. Like, not that I ever would, but you know what I'm saying? If I was trying to make myself vomit, mm-hmm. It would take a lot for me to actually vomit. I've never mm-hmm. actually done that. But if I was, mm-hmm. it would take a lot. I would have to go really far down my throat, is my guess. Whereas an infant, I mean, you could probably barely put your finger in their throat and it would cause them to gag. It's not going far enough down towards their throat to cause them to choke. Does that make any sense? Mm-hmm. So actually their gag reflex gets further and further towards their throat as they age and as they get used to eating food. So it takes a lot more for them to actually choke than you would think, because they will gag on it much easier than we would as adults. Mm-hmm. So what I'm trying to say is they're going to gag before they choke. And that gagging, like you said, is not the same thing as choking. So what you don't want to do is start slapping them on the back. Mm-hmm. That's the worst thing you can do. I know I've had some babysitters and family members who have, slapped my kids on the back when they start to gag, and I'm like jumping at them like, no, you don't do that. That'll actually make it worse. Just let them work it out on their own. Like you said, don't overreact. Let them safely cough it back up, because that's what they're going to learn to do. And it's like every time that happens during that baby-led weaning process, they're learning, how much food they can eat at a time and mm-hmm. how far down it can go before they choke. I mean, it's a learning process, the whole entire thing. So that was the biggest thing for me was I think I read that section like 5 times trying to convince myself that what I was doing was safe for my child. I was so nervous about choking. Mm-hmm. I mean, so nervous about it.
Yeah, it was. Okay, I'm going to tell my story because this is like this just sticks out in my brain so vividly from our time with Shay and baby-led weaning. We were at a Mexican restaurant, and I think it might have just been it was either my parents or my in-laws. I don't remember who, but a set of grandparents. And Shay had reached for, and she was probably like 8-9 months, reached for a tortilla chip, which, okay, you know, that's probably
jagged edges.
Yeah. So fine. I mean, you know, she could gum it and it was fine, but she started to gag and it got to it. She actually, well, everyone was convinced she was choking, of course. So all the grandparents are standing up, like ready to do whatever it is that they were thought that was going to help the situation. And I'm just like, it's okay. She's working through it. And they were looking at me like I had 12 heads. And Shay proceeded to vomit on the table in the restaurant.
Oh my God.
And I was like, see, everything's fine.
I knew it. I knew she'd be fine.
And they all looked at me like, that's not okay. But it was okay. Gosh. It was okay. I mean, was it the best food choice? No, but that's exactly what this is all about. It's all about offering what is being served at the table. And so that was what we were having for dinner. And so she was right there along with us. So, I mean, not that she sits there eating fistfuls of tortilla chips at 8 months old, but we gave it to her for that, you know, that experience. And she's fine. I mean, really sticks out in my memory as to a kind of a moment where my in-laws or my parents, I don't remember who it was, but I vividly remember the look of, can we not, Nicole, can we just rethink this and maybe go to purees?
And she learned from that experience as well. I mean, I'm sure she learned something from that. And I do think, and again, the book explains it really, really well about how, you know, when we were growing up, you know, I was fed pureed foods and then it slowly got chunkier and chunkier and the textures got, you know, thicker and more defined. Whereas just giving them straight up, you know, tortilla chips or carrots, it actually does make sense. And a lot of people think, how are they eating that? Because they don't have teeth. But if you've ever been bitten by a baby that doesn't have teeth, I mean, gums, I could eat without teeth. I mean, I wouldn't be able to eat, you know, maybe a filet, but you could eat without teeth. Your gums are so strong. Now, granted, it hurt much more when Cameron got teeth when he was biting my nipples when I was breastfeeding. But even when he bit them without teeth, I mean, it hurt. They are very strong. So you can eat just about anything with just gums and maybe one or two little teeth in the front. So, you know, especially with a chip, you know, your saliva softens that starch and it slowly starts to degrade in your mouth. So, yeah, I mean, it doesn't make sense at first, but when you really think about it, it actually makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, I love it. This is just so my jam. It's my favorite topic. So, okay, just some housekeeping stuff. So don't leave baby alone and avoid some choking hazards. So I would say I loosely follow these, but nuts, grapes, cherries, apple skin.
I gave Paige apple skin for sure.
Yeah, me too. it's funny though, even with cherries, I can remember last summer being at the beach. So Piper would have been not even two. And I was just giving her Bing cherries. And she was eating the pits and everything. Like it didn't
bother. Are you serious?
Yeah.
The pits?
Yeah. Didn't bother. I'm like,
oh my gosh,
all she's going to do is poop them out. I mean, she's fine.
I mean, she didn't even swallow that. I mean, I feel like I wouldn't, that would feel weird going down my throat. You know what I mean? Like the jagged.
Yeah. I mean, I tried to slow her down to like pick the pit out, which is difficult to do and impossible to teach a one-year-old. She was completely unfazed. So I wouldn't let her have like dozens and dozens of them. But just because I don't know, is that even healthy to have that many cherry pits in your stomach? But there was no slowing her down. And I was like, you know what? It's cool. If it's not bothering you, it's not going to bother me. So
I love it.
That's probably a bad example, but not everybody would be okay with that. And so I'm probably on a pretty far end of the baby led weaning spectrum. And okay, she's not a baby, obviously, but I think it still applies. Like, you know, just letting her kind of roll with what's going on. And she actually learned by the end of the summer how to spit out the pit.
Nice.
Her sister taught her how.
Perfect.
Too funny. All right. Should I happen to kind of Sarah Remmer's Baby Led Weaning 101, which is a quick like six, and we've already talked about most of them, but I think she did a really nice job of summarizing. So, So the first one is gagging is normal. Don't freak out. And I like that she points out that babies are physically ready to move food back to the front of their mouth to avoid choking. And so that's, right. I think what you're talking about. I mean, you're growing that muscle and that skill. And so babies learn that pretty quickly. So trust in that process. The second is babies eat what you eat. A few notes on that, kind of to avoid heavy salt, excess salt, heavy spice, that type of thing. But aside from that, green light.
Yeah. Like whenever we got Chinese food, I would typically order one meal with the sauce on the side.
Yeah.
Because we did that a couple times. And that way it was just steamed vegetables and some steamed chicken or beef and then rice, done. Mm-hmm. Without all the, you know, basically salty sauce.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. The third is nutrients. So focusing on things that are iron rich. So meat, poultry, fish, beans, lentils, eggs, iron fortified grains. But definitely including basically any whole food. So if it's a healthy choice, it's a good choice to offer in baby led weaning, as kind of those first foods and, you know, it goes from there. The fourth, we already talked about, prepare for a mess. It's part of the journey. The fifth, don't go too small with food. So that's kind of the whole premise. Oh, I have another story. And this one, I have such a bad memory, but when it comes to baby led weaning, I remember stuff. We were at a 4th of July party and there was a mom there who had a child very similar in age to Shay, and Shay was probably 2.5 at the time. Mm-hmm. Maybe not even, maybe. Anyway, I was probably pregnant. So she was probably not quite 2. And the mom, like, shredded between 2 plastic forks a hot dog. I mean, it was like she had taken this hot dog to a cheese grater for her son that was like 3 years old. And then she goes,
what?
He doesn't eat anything. I'm like, I wouldn't eat a hot dog that had just been shredded between 2 forks either.
As like hot dog hash?
Yes, exactly.
Oh my gosh. That just, yum.
Oh, that image. Good job, Gina. That's the perfect. Yes. She hot dog hashed this thing. And then she's confused as to why her son doesn't want to eat it. I'm like, well, no shit. He doesn't want to eat it. You already chewed it for him. Like, so.
But see, I think some people get so nervous there. That is. And I'm not saying this is how this woman is. Maybe she just, I don't know. But some people, it's like they prolong the pureeing and mincing of their foods for their kids for so long that then their kid has no idea what textures are supposed to feel like and what food is supposed to look like.
Yeah.
I mean, the kid was almost 3. I mean, come on. I mean, you don't know how old he was, but you're assuming he was, even if he was 2, I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. I can't, I just remember her looking at Shay as Shay was just eating whatever I put on her plate that was like people food. I don't know. Like unadulterated food.
Like a hot dog. Pure and simple.
Yeah.
In a bun.
I couldn't even tell you what was on her plate. And she was just like, Shay's such a good eater. I'm like, it's a hot dog. Like, of course she's going to eat it. I mean,
right. Exactly.
This is not rocket science here. And I just remember it so vividly. All right. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm full of stories.
The fine motor skills. Yeah, totally. I think that, you know, the picking up of the little pieces of food. You're saying don't go too small because obviously when they're when they're about 6 months, they can't even manipulate the food into their tiny little fingers. Mm-hmm. But once they get closer to a year, they get really, really good at that. Even 8 months, I would say.
Yeah.
I don't remember the exact time.
Again, I'm not a rule follower when it comes to baby-led weaning, but I would even argue that cutting the food too much defeats the purpose of baby-led weaning. For example, like before we would offer apple skin, let's say, I would send to daycare like a peeled whole apple. Like go at it, or a whole pear. Like I'm not going to dice it up into little pieces. Cause the whole idea is kind of like, this is what food looks like. This is a pear. I think cutting stuff just too small somewhat defeats the purpose. And that's more of an opinion probably than a rule. But again, just make it easy on yourself. So, all right.
Agreed.
Number six, continue breastfeeding or using formula. Per kind of the age appropriate feeding schedule. And in just some, Sarah makes a couple other notes, cut food into strips or sticks, kind of like toast. You know, you don't need to give the whole piece of toast, like cut off a stick or whatever. It's a texture that they can, you know, they'll get, and it's something that they can grab onto without maybe too much waste. Don't offer too many options. You don't want to overwhelm the baby. Skip bowls, plates, all that, and just let them go. Eat with baby, sit down, kind of make it an experience together. So
I think that's a really good one, to skip bowls and plates. they're just going to throw it on the ground. I mean, that's the bottom line. And until they are old enough to know not to play with their food, and it takes quite a while, in my opinion, at least it did with my kids, don't give them a plate. Don't give them a bowl. You're just going to drive yourself nuts. Just put it in front of them. No big deal. It's going to get messy regardless. You're not going to save any mess by giving them a bowl or a plate. So just don't even do it. I like
that.
Did
your high chair have a... Okay, this is going to... So some have inserts on the tabletop, but... So some have inserts that don't go, they're like smaller than the actual entire tray.
No.
You had the tray that fully removed.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I think that's key. If you're interested in baby-led weaning or think that you, it doesn't matter. If you're feeding a child, it's messy. Scratch exactly. that. It doesn't matter, baby-led weaning. It's going to be messy. So embrace the mess. But don't you think that having that removable full-size tray and you can just take it to the sink and hose it off?
It was key, honestly. Mm-hmm. And you can still remove a tray from any high chair. You can remove a tray, but it's big and awkward. But having that little thin, you know, insert on the tray that you can remove and clean made it so much easier. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then also I would say that one of my favorite tips was to buy, I think I went onto Amazon. I bought like a plastic sheet and I put it under, it might've even been like a tablecloth, honestly. Mm-hmm. I put it under the high chair. And so everything that ended up on there, I would just, you know, kind of pick it up at the end of the meal and then just kind of shake it outside and spray it down after every single meal. I mean, that thing was stained terribly after a year of baby-led weaning or just feeding an infant. But it was, I mean, it saved our floors. So
exactly.
It made a huge difference.
Yeah, definitely. Right, so which rules would you say, baby-led weaning rules, did you follow or not follow?
Okay, so I want to start off by saying that there are a lot of Facebook groups, baby-led weaning Facebook groups. I don't know if you joined any of them, but I highly recommend not joining them. Or if you do, don't post too much because you will get, it's like breastfeeding. If you say one thing about something that you did, oh, I'm breastfeeding, but I gave my child formula. I saw something on Facebook the other day in the comments that people make, oh my gosh, they're just cruel. So I feel like the people out there who are really hardcore baby-led weaners, if you do one thing wrong, like if you use one of those mesh little, you know, those little mesh things that they're supposed to have in their hands and you can put like cantaloupe or avocado in there and then it kind of oozes through the mesh. Mm-hmm. Oh, how dare you use that thing? That's not baby-led weaning. I would highly recommend not following a Facebook group unless you're just ready for the scorn. What rules did I follow? So there were plenty that I did follow and plenty that I did not follow. So I went in it, like you said, very ad lib. I did not, I knew what the rules were, but in my opinion, I wasn't doing it to follow rules. I was doing it as a mother who wanted my kid to learn to love food and new flavors and textures. That was really my ultimate goal. I knew that you weren't technically supposed to use pureed foods in baby-led weaning, but I knew that as a working mother who sent her kid to daycare, and in-home daycare, I knew that I was going to have to use purees at some point. And I also knew about the iron, so I wanted to give her that iron, iron cereal. So I definitely gave both my kids pureed foods at times. Now, I will say I never once purchased, so this is a true story, with both my kids, not once have I purchased formula or baby food. And I'm not saying that like, yay, I'm the best, but I cannot believe that. Like I made all my milk myself. I'm pretty proud of myself for this.
Yeah.
And when I also made all my purees and I just used my magic bullet and I froze it in little cups. It was super easy. So I did feed them purees every once in a while. And sometimes I would even like put a puree on a rice cake so that they were still doing the, you know, baby-led weaning, but I would still give them like pureed peas or butternut squash, but on a rice cake.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Oh, like I said, my babysitter at the time did not really feel comfortable with the baby-led weaning process, and I obviously respected that very much. So when they went to daycare, I would say both of them, they either were fed oatmeal or actually it was oatmeal, the rice-fortified oatmeal or some type of puree. And I'm sure there are other rules that I didn't follow, but those are the big ones that come out to my mind. So I did purees every once in a while. And what was the other one I just said? I did purees. That's really it. Yeah, I did. Oh. And I also was very picky about the foods. Like in the book, it says one of the best, you know, first foods that you can give your child is you know, whole carrots or red peppers. And I did get very nervous about that. I usually always cooked them first. So I, instead of giving them whole carrots or whole like red pepper, you know, slices, I shouldn't say whole, but slices of red pepper, I would always cook them a little bit first. So they were a little bit softer. So I think that that's kind of anti-baby led weaning. Maybe not. I don't know. But I never, it took me a while to feel comfortable giving them the fresh, non-adulterated vegetables, particularly, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah.
I felt better, you know, cooking them a little bit.
Yeah. And again, like, that's, I don't think that makes you a baby-led weaning reject at all. Against
the, well, but if you told the Facebook page people, they, you better believe. I mean, I think I posted something about using that mesh. That mesh thing. I bought it once before I even knew about baby-led weaning for Paige. And I posted something like a picture of her using that. And you should have seen the comments. That's when I liked that page. I mean, I was over it. And just, I didn't need that kind of.
So unnecessary. You know what? If you're willing to clean that mesh thing, more power to you. You're a better mom than me.
It was terrible. You're right. No, I was not. I think I used it once. I'm not even kidding. It was terrible.
You're like, wow, that looks difficult to clean. Trash.
Exactly.
We had one of those too. I think I did use it a time or two, but yeah, that just makes me a baby-led weaning failure as well.
You're terrible, Nicole.
I know. Well, I
should not be leading this.
I know. I feel like it's a journey. You know, it definitely gives you that framework to start early. And that said, I did start more so, but on a cereal, avocado, breast milk kind of first foods. Mm-hmm. And it was really, I don't know, my kids just like to eat. Like my kids, I would say, would always choose food over milk, with the exception of like that nighttime feed. So for me, there was more emphasis on sticking with the breastfeeding schedule than I would say there was for me. That was more stressful to make sure that they were getting that, because my kids basically loved everything I threw at them from the very get-go. And so we didn't really do a whole, we just quickly moved into whole foods. So I would say purees were pretty short-lived for us. So yeah, I mean, other than that, I mean, maybe I did that mesh thing like once, I don't know.
Yeah, that's how I was exactly.
And just because it was a gift, I was like, oh, that looks cool. Let's try it. And, you know, I think they're going to be just fine.
It wasn't as cool as it looked.
Yeah, agreed. So what were some of the foods that you started your baby-led weaning kind of journey with?
So I was looking at your list and almost the exact same thing, I would say. So for sure, eggs. Now I realize eggs are an allergen, but Nick or I have allergies in our family. So I really was not too concerned about that. So I also gave them fish, and I also know what to look out for when it comes to allergies. Like neither of my kids had skin issues with eczema or psoriasis or anything like that. I knew kind of what to watch out for, and they didn't exhibit any of those signs. So eggs and fish were probably two of the first foods that I gave them. And I don't know that I waited, you know, 2 days in between each. I probably didn't. And also, of course, being a dietitian and just being, you know, nutrition forward, I also wanted to start them with vegetables. So I would say broccoli, cooked carrots, and just, you know, raw cucumber were two things or three things that I was adamant about giving them their first, you know, couple months, I would say. Those are the easy vegetables, in my opinion, to give them. And when I say those, it was definitely cooked broccoli, cooked carrots, and the cucumber was raw. So I think it's because cucumber's a little bit softer. It doesn't have, it has that harder edge, but it's softer in the center. So I wasn't worried about that. I mean, you wouldn't cook cucumber anyway. So cucumber, I was not concerned about, but you know, the broccoli and the cooked carrots, I definitely gave to them cooked. I even sometimes bought the canned cooked carrots just to make it easier.
Yeah. And I think cold cucumber and cold celery kind of cut into sticks for teething was always, my kids loved that, that cold kind of crunch or something that they could kind of gum and get, it just really, it wasn't as cold as like an ice pack or an ice ring, but it did, they really seemed to enjoy that when they were teething.
Yeah, I agree. Especially the celery. I think Paige once like ate a piece of celery for 20 minutes. I mean, she was just gnawing on it for 20 minutes and she just loved it.
And celery has a very distinct flavor too.
It does. It's kind of bitter. So yeah, you're kind of getting them used to that bitter-ish flavor. Yeah. And she loved, Paige loved broccoli. In fact, I found a picture of her, one of my favorite pictures of her when she's, I think, like 7 months old, just going to town on a piece of broccoli. And I'm going to post that on our Instagram because it's just adorable.
Oh, I'm sure I've seen it, but I want to see it again.
You probably have. But of course, you have on your list avocado and banana and peanut butter toast and whole wheat pasta. I'm sorry, I'm saying your list. And those are also exactly what I gave to both my kids. I mean, it was on a rotation. We bought those little rotini pastas that they could grab onto pretty easily. Always whole wheat, because why not? We would do little pieces of whole grain toast and slice them, you know, in strips with some peanut butter or almond butter on top. And a very thin layer too, because speaking of choking, I mean, peanut butter is also another choking hazard. I mean, I've given Cameron loves eating just like whole spoonfuls of peanut butter. And a couple times he's taken such a big bite that he's like started to gag. And I'm like, oh my gosh, drink this almond milk or this milk. Get it down. I mean, he puts so much food in his mouth. And that's something that I would say baby-led weaning did not help him with, because he has still not learned to take small bites and not overload your mouth with gobs and gobs of food. But anyway, I digress. What about you? I've already named all yours.
Yeah, I think I always focused on, other than iron, I think fat was a priority for me. So, I mean, the brain is just growing so fast at that age, and your brain is nearly all fat. So in my brain, I was like, all right, well, fat seems like a good choice. And really just kind of well-rounded. But starting with, I remember Shay and Piper both loved salmon. And so I would just like roast salmon and avocado. They loved scrambled eggs. Yeah. I mean, everything that you named. I don't really nothing in addition to. I would really just from the very beginning, like if we were having a vegetable soup, let's say, I would just strain out whatever vegetables, bring them to just so that they were, you know, lukewarm, and throw those on the tray and kind of see what happens. So maybe it was some carrots or green beans or corn, or I mean, just whatever it was, go for it. Some diced up little chicken, but basically didn't change the content of whatever our meal was, just kind of adapted it to be baby led weaning appropriate. Because obviously a 6 month old is not going to be eating soup.
Right. So exactly. That's a great idea. And it's already prepared. What, you know, that's what I'm saying. I use canned foods often, canned beans as well. I mean, I would take cans of black beans, and of course I would strain them, because I don't buy the low sodium black beans. So I'd put them through the strainer and then rinse them and then give them beans. My kids used to just house beans, and they're not quite as prone to eat them now when I give them to them on their plate, but they'll eat them in, you know, tortillas with some cheese melted on top. But they used to just go to town on beans. Gosh, I wish that they still did.
Same, I would say. I mean, still some, but yeah, more like vegetarian refried beans. And
anyway. Love refried beans. Yes, yeah. I would agree with that.
We love those in our house. So Gina, do you think that baby-led weaning helped your kids in any way?
Okay, so this is a good question. So I've kind of already alluded to that question a little bit. So I'll start with Paige, because she was my first. So I always like to say that baby-led weaning made Paige more of, or I guess less of, a reluctant eater, because she is willing to try just about everything that we give her. I mean, she is willing to try it. I'm not going to say she likes it, but she is willing to try just about everything. And I don't know that it's because of baby-led weaning, but I like to say it is, of course. I also think that it helped her be a less picky eater, because she's a pretty good eater. I mean, like I said, I mean, even the things that she tries and doesn't love, I mean, she doesn't spit it out. She'll eat it and she'll try it again. And she eats just about, you know, pretty much, I would say 70% of the things that we put on her plate. So I think that's pretty good. And so I don't know if it's, again, the baby-led weaning or if just the way that she is. Because I've never been a picky eater. My parents did not use baby-led weaning on me, and I'm just not a picky person. I eat just about everything. So I would like to say it's the baby-led weaning, but maybe not. But, and then there's the fork usage. So my kids, both of them, prefer eating with their hands, which I know that sounds terrible. But I sometimes blame baby-led weaning. Again, it wouldn't have mattered because if I was spoon-feeding them, they wouldn't have learned to use utensils either. But sometimes I blame baby-led weaning for my kids growing up thinking that it's okay to eat with your hands. And I think it also has to do with me and Nick as parents. I mean, we should be more diligent about making sure that they use utensils. But we're, again, I don't want to make mealtime stressful. So I kind of still am in that stage, especially with Cameron, not as much with Paige, where I'm still kind of letting him play a little bit. And I think I need to kind of rein it in and give them a fork and a spoon more often and let them use those. I would say Paige is getting much better. I mean, she probably, I mean, rarely does she use her fingers, but I think she uses them more often than I would like. Cameron, I would say I had less. He is just a pickier eater, period. End of story. I went into the whole baby-led weaning process with him thinking it would go really, really well, just like with Paige, who was eating salmon and broccoli from the get-go. But Cameron has always been pickier. He will put things in his mouth and spit it right out. So I don't know how much it's actually helped him, but at the same time, maybe he'd be pickier if we hadn't done the baby-led weaning. Who knows? What else was I going to say about that? Oh, I also truly believe, and this is my, I'll never, whenever anyone asks me about baby-led weaning and choking, I truly believe that my kids have never choked on food. And I honestly think it's because we started giving them whole foods at such a young age. So I think that it has helped, if not, if for nothing, or if for no reason at all, it helped them learn how to handle food in their mouth and how not to choke and how, if they're gagging, how to get it back up. I remember Paige specifically had more issues with the gagging. I'd be so nervous every time I fed her. And she was such a champ every single time, just coughing that food up. And I really believe that baby-led weaning helped them just not to choke and learn how to handle the food in their mouth better. Mm-hmm. So all in all, I would do it again and again and again and again if I had to. I think it's a great program. Do I think it was a miraculous way of feeding my kids and it made miraculous changes? No. But am I glad I did it? Absolutely. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah. I mean, I do feel very fortunate that I think my kids overall do great with textures, new foods, different spice levels. Excuse me. They even say they love spicy stuff. They like bold flavors. But I think what, you know, I think you and I probably both have experienced is that they are people and their food preferences definitely change. For example, right. Shay used to love mashed potatoes. She calls them smashed potatoes, of course, but she will not come near them now. I mean, mm-hmm. she will start gagging if I even offer her a bite. And she used to eat so many. I mean, me and Piper, we will go to town on mashed potatoes. Shay does not like anything creamy and white, even tonight. I was serving like a crab stuffed like ravioli. Nope, wouldn't try it. But she sat there and downed a whole bunch of asparagus.
Okay.
So it's kind of like, okay. But I think what I've learned to accompany baby-led weaning is kind of a continuum. So for me, that was early introduction of whole foods and kind of you eat what mom and dad are eating type of thing, coupled with, you know, not being a short order cook. And she realizes that kind of this is dinner, like she ain't going to back down. Like,
exactly.
So yep. I better find something here. So I think that has made her a little bit more adventurous, but absolutely. I think like people say all the time, like, oh, your kids are such good eaters. And they are. But I have like kid envy when it comes to food too. Like my kids will not eat hummus. It's like a hard no.
Mm.
And I feel like hummus is a pretty, I feel like that's a kid friendly, like cool food. But they'll sit there and pound green olives. Like, so I think it just really,
I know, right?
Good green olives. So I think there's definitely some wins and there's definitely some losses, but mm-hmm. you know, I think as kids get older, it's continuing to stay open to them growing in their love for food that they haven't previously enjoyed. So
exactly.
Keeping that relationship with food healthy and fun, I think will just lend to overall better food acceptance over time. So,
right. You know, baby-led weaning, I think, is a lot like breastfeeding in that you don't go into it assuming that it's going to have miraculous outcomes and that your kid's going to be the best eater of all time. Just like with breastfeeding, don't go into it and assume that because you're breastfeeding, your kids won't have allergies or ear infections because, sure, their chances are going to decrease, but it doesn't mean that's not going to happen. I mean, I breastfed Cameron for 14 months and he probably had 10 ear infections throughout that entire time. Mm-hmm. I have a coworker who has breastfed her daughter, I think, for 2 years, and she has nut and egg allergies. Don't go into it assuming it's gonna make a huge, huge difference. Do it because you want to do it and because you want to have these fun food adventures with your kids and that you want your kids to love food. You know, do it because you want to do it, not because you want to see all these, you know, crazy things happening to your children with regards to food, because it's not going to be like that. You know, a lot of us grew up eating baby foods and purees. We turned out just fine. So it's not something that if you don't do, your child's going to be a picky eater or not want to eat textures. It's not like that. It's mm-hmm. do it because you want to do it. Not just for your kid, I think, is what I like to tell people, because it really is. I think it does make it more fun when you're doing, like you said, it's kind of the lazy way to do it. You don't have to think as much. It's like the one thing about parenting you don't have to think about. It's great. You just put whatever you're making for your family on their plate. You don't have to think. It's the one time. It's great.
Well, and if you're somebody who maybe struggles to make healthier food choices for yourself, or your maybe say your spouse or your older children, introducing baby-led weaning to your six-month-old is a great way to stay diligent about the nutrition for yourself and your family as well. So
I agree.
I mean, be selfish. No, I'm just kidding.
No, you're not. Okay, so quickly, what are our mom wins and our favorite new products or recipes? I'll go first.
Okay.
Okay. So I experienced Shake and Bake last weekend. Have you ever used Shake and Bake?
I have not.
Okay, Nicole, I know you probably have your own little recipe for your own concocted Shake and Bake that you have in little Ziploc bags. Well, if you don't have time to do that, my friends, I am in love with Shake and Bake. Oh. Now, my kids did not love it quite as much as I did. I think next time I'm going to use chicken thighs, because the chicken nuggets they're used to are really, really tender and probably like dark rib meat, which sounds disgusting, but it's probably dark meat and they're tenders. So I think next time I use the Shake and Bake, I'm going to do it with either like a chicken leg or a chicken thigh, a boneless chicken thigh, and then use the Shake and Bake and then mince it for them, or cut it in smaller pieces, not mince it, but for Cameron, I'll probably mince it, but cut it in smaller pieces so they don't like have a giant chunk of meat in their mouth.
No hash, no hash, no Gina.
We're going to take it to the grater. Shake and Bake hash coming at you. But I really, really liked it. I thought it was easy. It was tasty and it wasn't too much sodium. It was actually, I can't remember what the milligrams were, but it came out to be probably half of what their chicken nuggets were. So I liked it.
It's cool.
I'm gonna start keeping it in my cup and in my cabinets for those times when I just don't feel like doing anything else. So yeah.
No, I'm going to check it out. Cause last night I made fish tacos with like cod that I put in strips, and then you do your egg wash, and then egg wash, but you do your egg dunk, and then it was like a panko seasoned, and then you bake it, and it was great. I mean, and I put it in tortillas with, shredded red cabbage and, or purple cabbage, whatever that color.
Sounds
and,
good.
Sliced red. Radishes and then a little bit of guacamole, and both the kids ate it. And I was like, ooh, mom went, wow. Like, don't freak out. They're eating it. Nice. So that
I think
was
my kids would eat that. Paige would at least eat that. I think that sounds yum.
My kids really like fish. So that's a win for me. And in general, Piper has really been enjoying salad. So not that I offer it a ton at home. I eat it more like when we're out. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. But Piper really enjoys salad. So that's great. And for Shay, she is very open to eating it, but I admittedly like ranch dressing. So I need to switch up my dressings though, because Shay has a hard no on ranch dressing.
Really?
So, that's white and creamy. Like, Shay is not about white and creamy.
Oh, that's right. White and creamy. Gosh, I forgot.
Like, instant gag. So I would say we've had some wins here lately. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, good. Salad. I have to try that with my kids yet. Salad. I just don't eat a lot of salads here. So I don't even know if they've ever tried a salad. I know that sounds crazy. We just rarely do salads. So maybe I'll make that a goal of ours.
That's your goal for next podcast.
Mm-hmm. For next time.
All right. So read a review for this, I don't know, this podcast comes from Jesse James 321. And she says, Gina and Nicole make me laugh. The nutrition topics and relevant are relevant and evidence-based yet approachable. Thanks, ladies. Can't wait to hear more. So
love it.
Thanks for listening. These are fun. So be sure to, well, before I go, is there anything else we want to add on baby-led weaning before I wrap us up?
Oh, I was going to say real quick, there's a picture I'm posting when we post this, this episode. One time, okay, so I read in the book, again, the book, that if you give your kid sliced flank steak and just let them chew on it, they'll get the juices out of the flank steak or any red meat, and it'll get a lot of iron from that. So I posted a picture, I'm going to post a picture when this podcast comes out, of Paige gnawing on a piece of red meat. It's probably my favorite picture of her in the whole wide world. And it's just like this giant piece of meat that she is just going to town on. And I am not even kidding. She turned this piece of meat into jerky. It was the funny. I mean, it was great. You asked me to come up with a story, and that was my story. I mean, it came out of her mouth, and it was just all of the juices had been just sucked dry.
It came out as jerky.
It did. It really, really did. Oh, it was an amazing sight. So that was fun.
Oh, so, yeah. Post it for sure. If you don't, I'll remind you.
I will for sure. That's all right. Hilarious. Social media. You're on, Nicole.
All right. Find us. We are on Instagram and Facebook at Dietitian's Dish Podcast, and shoot us an email, dietitiansdishpodcast@gmail.com. And Gina, talk to us about our reviewers.
Yeah. Well, you just read the review. So leave us a review. We will try to read every time we get a 5-star review, we'll read it on our podcast. So we just read one from Jesse James. Once we get more, we'll read that aloud as well. We know we'll get more. And coming to you in 2 weeks, we will be hosting an episode on the low FODMAP diet for irritable bowel syndrome, and really for a lot of ailments that you might be experiencing. So the low FODMAP diet is one that has been in the news a lot, I believe. I think it was listed on a lot of different podcasts I listen to in the new year for like the top 5 diets. And it's not a diet in the sense of, you know, for weight loss or that kind of diet. It's really just a diet to make you feel better if you're experiencing any type of symptoms regarding, you know, irritable bowel or just bloating, gas, anything like that, anything that's making you uncomfortable. So I think it would be beneficial for anyone to listen to this podcast. And it's even something that you can do with your kids if they're experiencing something such as constipation or diarrhea. So please come back in a couple of weeks and listen to that episode. It's one that I've been following for about 10 years. So, and that's all I've got. I'm ready to go watch The Bachelor.
I bet you are.
Wait, who do you think is going to win? I hate to say it like that. Who's going to win? Shouldn't be like that, but who do you think?
Okay, I'm not going to answer because I Googled spoilers.
Did you Google, Colton? The guy who... No. Who's the guy that posts at the beginning of the...
Oh, yeah. What is
Reality
his name?
Steve. Reality
yeah.
Steve.
Yeah, totally.
Is that what you Googled?
Well, I didn't... That's who I read, but I just Googled Bachelor, Colton Bachelor.
Because okay. I think I know what it is too.
Okay, what do you think?
So from what I read, it sounds like... And again, if you haven't seen the episode yet, you can pause it now, but here's what I read. I read that, and by it's Nick, because he looks at this stuff too, read that it's going to be Casey, that he's not going to pick either of the two girls left. He's actually going to go to visit Casey at her, where she lives, and try to beg for her to come back to him.
Wait, are you Cassie?
Cassie, sorry, not Casey, Cassie. Yes.
Okay.
Is that what you heard?
Do you really want me to say?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Which is so lame, because I'm sorry, it's like you need to go read that book. He's just not that into you, but she's just not that into you. If she's already left, I'm sorry, Colton, she's just not that into you. Why even waste your time and energy going back, right?
Oh, totally. This season has been very difficult to watch in some ways. So
all right,
we should do a Bachelor episode.
But really?
Kind of think about it.
I would be down. Nick might be able to get in on that one too, because he's...
Oh, and Mark watches.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
We could do a little couple on couple Bachelor throwdown kind of. Yeah.
Let's do it.
We could do like a, what is that called? A bracket. There you go.
So for the Bachelorette, we'll set up a bracket.
Yes. Yes.
You should totally do that.
Yes.
But you cannot do the Reality Steve. You cannot.
No, I won't. I won't. Promise. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, I only get desperate at the end. Like, I was so frustrated after last week. I'm like, F it. I'm going for it. So,
yeah, because we've known from the get-go. So that's terrible.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Too funny. All right, Gina.
All right, everyone.
We'll talk soon.
And Nicole. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you for listening for the podcast. Bye-bye.